Ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
As we continue to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic, important environmental research continues to take place at top-tier research universities across America, including UW-Milwaukee. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to talk to two scientists who are engaged in research projects tied to one of our most precious natural resources, fresh water. Sandra McClellan and Rebecca Clapper are both professors at UWM's School of Freshwater Sciences, the only school of freshwater science in the United States. There have been some major developments in the work both Sandra and Rebecca are doing this summer. Sandra's project involves the study of the coronavirus's presence in our water. Well, Rebecca has received word that a $20 million research project she's involved in has just been renewed for another 5 years. Welcome, Sandra and Rebecca. Good to have you on today's program.
Thanks for having us.
You know, you've both been on separately, but this is the first time we've been able to talk to you together, and so we're delighted to get you both knitted together through the magic of technology. I have to begin, before we talk about your specific projects, to just ask you both generally, what's it been like to do research during a pandemic? It's certainly something that you never trained for or imagined before, was it, Sandra?
You know, it's really been kind of surreal. Being a microbiologist, I think this is something I've taught in my classes. We hear about at conferences, the next big pandemic. But to actually be living through one, we have, you know, one side knowing the science and another actually dealing with having to isolate, having to reinvent our lives, having to figure out how to work with our students remotely. You know, this has really affected our research program because research programs run down the road. People are in the laboratory, we're publishing papers, we're teaching classes. So to have it come to an abrupt start and regroup, I think was really a learning experience to figure out how do we still connect with each other and talk scientifically without, you know, being together in the lab and working on data and paper. So it's been a learning experience. I think after 2-3 months, we've kind of hit our stride on how to juggle those things.
How about you, Rebecca? What's it been like for you as a scientist?
I'd echo some of the same things that, you know, as an ecologist and toxicologist, we kind of anticipated at some point something like this would happen. But of course, we never anticipate that it's going to happen tomorrow, right? And so my students in general understand the concept of what's going on, but living with this has been very difficult as they miss collaborating with each other. And students learn so much from talking to each other. They're each doing different projects and doing different science. And so the day-to-day chances to speak with each other in the hallway or in the lab, they're really missing that right now. And I hear that echoed every time we have our virtual lab meetings. And we are used to being virtual in a way. Our center that I'm involved with, which we'll talk about later, is distributed. And so we have virtual meetings all the time with people at other campuses. But to have that science go virtual in our own lab is kind of an extreme. I think it's not only causing a little bit of pain in doing our science, but it also is causing some emotional havoc with our students, much like it is with students across the country from K through 12.
You know, both of you make a really good point about how collaboration is so important in your fields of study. And that may surprise some people who think, well, gee, a scientist, I guess that she's in her laboratory and she's thinking deep thoughts and focusing narrowly on just what is in front of her. But that's not the way science is done these days, is it? I mean, it really does require work with cohorts, with colleagues.
Yeah, science is very collaborative. And when I think about the collaborations I have, they are, you know, down the street, at the campus 7 miles away, up in biology, and then they're across the world in Australia and, you know, University of Hawaii, out in California. But what's interesting is that, you know, when we're working on a project together And whether we're working online or having, you know, having meetings, virtual meetings online, it's almost like we're in the same room. So we already do that as collaborators. What's been really different about this pandemic is that that type of collaboration has an upside where all of a sudden we're in the same room with people that maybe we wouldn't normally get together with, but there's no other way. We're not traveling to conferences. So now we're calling people in Europe and somebody I maybe wouldn't talk to very often, all of a sudden I can call them up and have this virtual meeting over coffee. So that's really the upside. You know, we're kind of increasing this collaboration that we already do, you know, across the country, across the world. The downside is, you know, it kind of, you get fatigued from doing that when that's your only form to interact, because you really get energized when you can see people face to face. So I think, you know, I think the pandemic in some ways has increased collaborations. People are more accessible because we can just reach out to them via the computer, but it takes a lot of effort.
Is that the case for you too, Rebecca? Has this been a virtual icebreaker with scientists you otherwise might not have been talking to?
I'd say, yeah. You know, one of the interesting things is that a lot of our international and national meetings have gone virtual. And so some people that might not have been able to participate because they couldn't travel or because of funding now can basically be at that meeting virtually. And it knocks out some of the personal interactions that you have at those meetings, which is unfortunate. But at the same time, when you have an international meeting and someone from maybe a school where they couldn't afford to send their scientists to that meeting can now present their work at this international conference virtually. And they have these, you know, chat rooms for the particular speakers where people can interact with them. There's the potential for it knocking down some of the barriers for some scientists and for some students that wouldn't be able to do that normally.
Well, let's talk about the work that each one of you is involved in. And although you are both in the School of Freshwater Science, you're underneath the same roof, you do have two very distinct different research laboratories. And Sandra, I think we'll begin with you because I began talking at the top of the program about how COVID-19 has affected research in general. You, this summer, have started a major project with universities around the country looking at COVID and the signals that are showing up in our water supply. Tell us what you're involved in.
You know, the project we've taken on with the COVID work is really kind of a natural extension of what we were already doing. We, for the last 15, 20 years, have worked on identifying different bacteria and organisms in polluted waters, like sewage, agricultural runoff, so we can track them to assure our waterways are safe. And as part of that research, we've done a lot sequencing organisms out of untreated wastewater sewage that comes to our wastewater treatment plant. And we've looked for viruses that might make us sick so we can understand the health risk. So when the, you know, kind of first reports of the virus, which is actually called SARS-CoV-2, that's the virus that causes the disease COVID-19. When we first heard reports that the SARS-CoV-2 could be detected in sewage, you know, the light bulb went on for all of us kind of environmental microbiologists that, hey, we should maybe be tracking this as a way to understand the disease in our community. And it wasn't, it wasn't a real natural thing to think about because it's a respiratory virus. What is it doing in sewage? How does it get into sewage? Well, it's actually shed through people, through the body, into the toilets. And then you think about saliva and other things that we do, you know, during our daily routines that it can end up in sewage. So the light bulb kind of went on for a lot of us to think, hey, we don't understand how widespread this is. This pandemic is, you know, there's asymptomatic people. There's not enough testing. How do we get a grip on what's going on in our communities? Well, when we think about how sewage systems are designed, it's really meant to bring all of that kind of waste from our homes into a central location. That gives us as microbiologists this well-mixed sample that we can look for the virus. And that's exactly what we started doing and many other people around the country that kind of do similar work that I do. And we found that we can track the trends of whether or not the virus is increasing in the community or decreasing. And I think long term, that's going to be a really valuable tool. That said, there's a whole lot of things we have to work out so that data makes sense to the public health people that need to make decisions.
You mentioned, Sandra, that you're working with colleagues around the country. Your work also is expanded beyond Milwaukee here in the state of Wisconsin, correct? Where you're not just looking at what's coming into the sewage treatment plant off of Jones Island, but other communities in Wisconsin are also engaged in this same sort of scientific query of what's in the water.
Yeah, so we actually have two projects. And the first one I want to mention is a project that's funded by our Department of Health Services, the state of Wisconsin. And my lab had started sampling sewage from Milwaukee. We worked with Racine and up in Green Bay to kind of initially get some samples and figure out if this is feasible. And kind of concurrently, we talked with our colleagues at the State Lab of Hygiene, which is based at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and they had a big interest in doing, you know, much larger areas. So together, we partnered on this grant that's funded through our Department of Health Services to essentially do wastewater surveillance throughout the state of Wisconsin. So all 72 counties have been kind of invited to participate in the surveillance program. And I have to put a shout out to my colleagues at the State Lab of Hygiene. They're really doing the bulk of many samples and the widespread coverage. And then my lab has really focused on the highly populated areas, the kind of southeast Wisconsin, and we share methods and do some cross-validation. But the end result is that we're going to be able to follow these trends collaboratively as we move forward into fall with schools reopening. And then, you know, as this pandemic changes, hopefully there'll be a vaccine down the road. Hopefully at some point we'll be able to observe it waning. That's not the case right now. The second project we're involved in is really colleagues around the country that are like me, that the light bulb went on and said, hey, we should be using these methods. And it was a really great scientific experience to have us literally start texting and emailing each other and, hey, we should talk. And it really formed into this grassroots group that about 10 of us that we meet on Tuesdays via virtually. And we share methods and talk about what's going on in our communities, how to plot the data. And then we were able to secure funding from the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to really bring this group together. And now we're serving as experts to the CDC. We're helping them, you know, give them some guidance on how do you do wastewater surveillance? What are we doing in our labs? What lessons can be learned for other areas in the country? And again, it's just been a really great scientific experience to see how it isn't just, I have an idea, I'm going to produce research. It's all of these people have really come together and said, hey, we have to solve this problem. And there's just been a lot of open source and sharing of data and knowledge through this whole process.
A great example of teamwork. You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in our at-home remote studios in this COVID age are Sandra McClellan and Rebecca Clapper, both professors at UWM School of Freshwater Sciences. We're talking about some of the recent research that both are engaged in, and Sandra has done a great job talking about some of the COVID-related water research. I'd like to bring Rebecca back into the conversation to talk about some great news on her front. Sandra, Rebecca, you just learned recently that a $20 million grant from the National Science Foundation has been renewed, and you are a big piece of that research. Tell us what you're involved in.
Yeah, this is a center called the Center for Sustainable Nanotechnology, and it's funded by the Chemistry Directorate at NSF as a Center for Chemical Innovation. You may ask why a freshwater scientist is involved in such a center. One of the goals of the center is to assist in the development of sustainable nanotechnology. So nanoparticles are kind of new to the marketplace in the last 15, 20 years. They're little particulates of chemicals that are down in sizes less than a red blood cell. And And they're being used for all sorts of different things. So from sunscreens to food additives to paints to some of the electronics that we're using, car batteries for electronic electric cars. And so our lab is evaluating how you could make these things more sustainable and less toxic to the environment so that when they're used, they are not harmful. So it's, heading it off at the pass, basically. And it's a collaboration with, 15 other universities where there are scientists from all over the country and some international collaborators that are involved with this huge project. And we've been working together for 8 years now, and we're lucky enough that we got another 5 years of funding as the second phase of this this major center. And so it's really exciting that we're able to collaborate with all of these great scientists that are internationally known and that they've included our lab here at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
So you've been involved in this research for a number of years, of the last 5 years, getting this major NSF grant with it being renewed now. What have you learned in these years of intensively looking at the water to see these tiny, tiny, tiny little particles that most of us don't give a second thought to?
Yeah, in the beginning, there was this huge fear that nanoparticles were going to be the next PCB, the next dangerous chemical out there that we'd really have to worry about. And first of all, nanoparticles aren't just one type of chemical. There are all sorts of different types of chemicals that can be formed into this nano size. And so one of the things that we know is that not all nanoparticles are created equal. There's this difference in toxicity depending on what the chemistry makeup and the size and the shape and the surface chemistry of these particles are. And so what we know also then from that is that you can make particles that are either more or less toxic or more or less useful for a particular product based on that chemistry. And so this has been huge. It's taken away some of the fear factor that was initially there about these products going into the marketplace and shown that you can, first of all, that we figured out methods to determine toxicity, because it was kind of unknown how you figure out chemicals in these particulate forms, how you even do a toxicity assay. And now we're way far ahead to, what types of aspects of these particles really make them more functional or make them more dangerous to humans or to wildlife and the freshwater environment. So it's been a huge leap over the last 15 years that we've been doing this in the growth of the science behind these types of questions.
Now, as you point out, the nanoparticles are found in a variety of different products, including perhaps the sunscreen we're going to be putting on during these summer months. And it's great that you've identified which ones are perhaps more of a risk to us than others. The big question that I have, and I suspect our listeners have, is have you been successful convincing the people who make the nanoparticles, who create the products that use these particles, to make adjustments in their formula if you see that something is more harmful than others?
That's the again, where the collaboration comes in. The great thing about this field is that from the start, it really has involved the companies that are making these products or want to use these chemicals in their products. And so the science has grown not only in academia, but also within the industrial collaborators and the government scientists in trying to figure out the answers to these questions. And so they've been intimately involved in the science from the beginning. It's not as we might think in the public sometimes of the chemistry industry being at odds with the scientists. It's really walked hand in hand where we're informing each other about what questions need to be addressed and how the science can play a role in improving products and improving the nanoparticles in our commerce.
Really, really fascinating work on both of your fronts. I have to ask both of you as scientists, you have your distinct laboratories in the wonderful, still almost brand new School of Freshwater Sciences at the UWM Harbor campus. And you've talked about colleagues that you work with around the world in your areas. I have to ask, do either of you ever walk down the hallway to each other's labs? And is there any interaction or sharing with scientists under the same roof, even if you are doing different kinds of work?
Not always on the specific topic area, but I always enjoy a great conversation, just like your listeners are learning from Rebecca I actually get to hear these things at lunchtime or over coffee or walking down the hall. So it's almost like a working at the Discovery Channel, where you get to hear great science, even though you're not actually working on that. But where we do interact is maybe understanding how to do science, how to approach science, how to keep our questions focused, how to be effective in reaching, you know, the people, the stakeholders that, you know, that really should be using our research. I get a lot of great ideas just talking with Rebecca about, you know, where should I take my next question? You know, research, you could spend thousands of hours running in circles and never really answer the question or get to the heart of it. And I think that is one of the lifelong skills or lifelong learning we need to do as scientists is how do we make ourselves more effective? And so I learned from other scientists in the building, and especially Rebecca, on, you know, how do I ask better questions? How do I get to my answer sooner? And how do I make it matter to other people? So thanks for that, Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you. And I'd also say that our students really benefit from interactions with the faculty. I mean, we have such a diverse faculty here at the school, and my students really enjoy talking to Sandra's students and learning about how they're doing their science and maybe some of the techniques that they're using that could be incorporated in our lab and how, you know, they think about the science that they're doing. I think it's really great to have graduate students and postdocs and undergrads in each of our labs that are able to talk to each other and learn from Sandra and then also learn from her students about how they're doing science.
Well, talking about collaboration, there's one more topic I wanted to introduce in today's program, and it's something called the Freshwater Collaborative of Wisconsin. It's a project that we've actually discussed here on UWM Today over the last couple of years with the dean of the school, Val Klump. This program is a way to connect the water scientists located on all 13 University of Wisconsin campuses around the state together and find a way to leverage the strengths and the assets that each campus in the state has. Even though there's only one school of freshwater sciences, it turns out that we've realized over the last few years that on every campus there are pockets of people who are doing work that can connect to other water-related research. How do both of you see the Freshwater Collaborative fitting into the work of the School of Freshwater Science here in Milwaukee? Sandra?
You know, I'm really excited about this because, and it's the same reason why I'm so excited to be at the School of Freshwater Sciences. You know, it's not discipline-specific what we're doing there. It's really centered around water. And I get to interact with hydrologists and, you know, ecologists and physical chemists. So think about that on a much larger scale, where now all of a sudden that umbrella of all these kind of different fields coming together around water is statewide. So I have colleagues at the University of Oshkosh that, you know, we've talked about egg runoff together and how to trace that better. And I've worked with colleagues over in La Crosse and up at UW-Green Bay. And each of us have these kind of connections across the state. So really weaving that together as a network is really a great thing because it takes it past us interacting as scientists and researchers and really engages our students. And exactly what, you know, Rebecca said, our students really benefit from seeing these different disciplines and seeing these different interactions. It's a way to really take it from just, you know, kind of that impact in our school to, you know, this larger umbrella where statewide we have it woven together as a great network.
How about you, Rebecca? Do you see that same synergy between the work you're doing here and the campuses elsewhere in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, our Center for Sustainable Nanotechnology is a collaboration with University of Wisconsin-Madison. One of the a few of the investigators are also there. The lead investigator is there. Like Sandra, we have collaborations with several different campuses. And to be honest, the School of Freshwater Sciences has graduated students that now are faculty at some of those other campuses like Oshkosh and La Crosse. And so we have natural connections to those other campuses. And each campus, the strength of this Freshwater Collaborative is that each campus has its own focus. So we have a kind of an urban feel, even though we do some other things in our, at our campus. Stevens Point, for instance, has a fantastic fisheries program. Out in the Western campuses have more of an ag focus. And so we're able to pull each of those different focus areas in so that our students benefit from being educated under each of these different topics that are so important to freshwater sciences. And it also gives a chance for Wisconsin really to shine as this hub of freshwater science. We have so many fantastic freshwater resources, from our groundwater, which we don't talk about too often, but we have fantastic groundwater resources, to our surface water, all the lakes, as well as the two Great Lakes that we are bounded by in our state. And so it really gives a chance for Wisconsin to show its strength as this research hub and also education hub for freshwater resources.
Yeah, and we should point out to our listeners that the Freshwater Collaborative, while it is coming together at the grassroots level, there's a funding request before the state legislature. Actually, the state assembly earlier this year unanimously approved an initial investment in funding the Freshwater Collaborative. And then the coronavirus came along and the action in the Senate, there was a companion bill in the Senate, and it was put on hold. And so the hope is that in this next legislative session that we'll pick up where we left off in terms of lobbying to get a major investment in the program. But one of the things that we should note is if the program is fully funded, it will allow for the creation of a new four-year undergraduate degree. Because right now, freshwater sciences focuses on graduate programs, but that would be very exciting for you folks if you now would be able to begin bringing in students as freshmen and sophomores and juniors to study freshwater sciences.
Yeah, absolutely. We have so many undergraduates that come through our labs one by one to do research projects, and they're bright and they're eager to learn about freshwater sciences. So having an undergraduate program would really allow us to have a much bigger impact on, you know, all these students that really, you know, they're very, very interested and invested in those types of studies.
And we get inquiries all the time about undergrads wanting to take a specific freshwater focus. It's such a huge international topic. So the potential for drawing students from all sorts of other places into the state of Wisconsin to learn about freshwater is huge through the collaborative of all of our campuses, but also through the School of Freshwater Sciences. So we really hope that it goes forward and that we have a real strong beginning to that undergraduate program.
Well, we'll be talking a lot more about that collaborative as we look at future programs. When this legislature wraps up its business, there'll be a new legislature sworn in January. And then, of course, the whole budget process starts. And that's where the rubber meets the road, because you can't do science without the money to pay for it. So we really, really appreciate the good work and support from around the state that has raised or elevated the Freshwater Collaborative and has received a lot of great support. Well, folks, we are just about out of time, but I want to thank both of you, Sandra, Rebecca, for just a fascinating conversation. The work that you're doing down at the School of Freshwater Science is so amazing. We wish you both continued success in your future research.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Sandra McClellan and Rebecca Clapper, both professors at UWM School of Freshwater Sciences, are guests on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. As always, we thank you for taking some time to learn about the amazing work that's being done in the laboratories and the classrooms at UWM. Take care, everybody. Stay healthy. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.